I'm Blair Palmer, and welcome to the Punks in Suits podcast, inspiring you to take the lead and be a force for change in your industry, your organization, and your own life. It's about being endlessly curious, making a difference, connecting with your purpose and with yourself, and taking the brilliant gamble of releasing the punk underneath your suit. Hello and welcome to episode 53 of the Punks in Suits podcast. I hope you are very well. For a while, I've been wanting to interview someone on the show who can articulate some of the connections between home education and the future of work. It's not my specialist area, although I have an opinion, obviously. I have an opinion about a lot of things, but this is not my specialist area. So that's what this show is about, and I'll tell you more about our guest in a moment. But a couple of things I want to mention first. I'm not on a mission to convert anybody to home education. That's not why I have someone on the show today talking about homeschool. It's a very individual choice. It's not what this podcast is about anyway. But there are a couple of reasons for wanting to talk about this on the show. The first is that there are threats to the freedoms that home educators have in this country and in other countries, actually, and a lot of misunderstanding about what home educating really means. And I'm in a position to share some of the truly brilliant, enlightened, well-researched thinking that informs many home educators when they're making their decision to home educate, to homeschool. And just as I believe that people are generally good, hardworking and trustworthy at work, I believe families generally love their children and want the best for them. And draconian controls on the family are as counterproductive as draconian controls on workers. So I definitely think there's a link there. And secondly, I really believe that our education system is outdated. It was built for the industrial age and the needs of that age. And when we look at the jobs of the future, where half of the workforce will be bots and where we'll need some pretty out-of-the-box thinking to address the challenges we'll be facing by then, adults who've passed through a system that was designed to produce factory workers and factory bosses will have to unlearn a great deal that they thought was true. In fact, I think this is happening already. Maybe there's a different way to produce the kinds of adults we'll need in the coming decades. So I think a look at education, not home education itself, but education in general, is very timely. So it was with all of that in mind, a huge thrill for me when today's guest, Kerry McDonald, agreed to talk to me on the show. Kerry is a mum of four unschooled children. Now, I should be clear, we mix terms up here. So we talk about home educating and unschooling. They're not actually entirely the same thing. Unschooling is a form of home educating. A lot of home educators don't unschool their children. If you're interested to know more about that, it's easy to find out more. You can go to Kerry's website. You can Google unschooling and find out about all the different kinds of schooling that people are doing at home. But Kerry is unschooling her children. She's a writer for Natural Mother magazine. She's a self-directed learning advocate. She's a board member at the not-for-profit Alliance for Self-Directed Education. She has a master's degree in education policy from Harvard University and is an education writer for several national media outlets, including Forbes, NPR and Education Next. She lives in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and she writes at Whole Family Learning. And you can go to that website. I'll give you all the information about how to follow her if you want to at the end of the show. Our conversation is wide-ranging, and even if you have zero interest in home education from a personal perspective, I think you'll find some of your beliefs and assumptions challenged by our conversation. And that's got to be good, right? So without further ado, let's go over to the interview. Kerry, thank you so much for joining us today.
It's great to be here with you, Blair.
There are, as ever, I mean, this is always the case with the people that I'm talking to on the show, but so many different things that we could talk about. So I think it might make sense to start with you telling us a bit about you, what you do, and where you got this interest
from?
Right. So I am located in Cambridge, Massachusetts, just outside of Boston. I unschool my four children who have never been to school, and their ages range from 4 to 11, two girls and two boys. And my interest really sprouted from an undergraduate college class I was taking as a senior doing a research project on alternative education. And I was an economics major, but I was an education minor. And so for this senior seminar, I was looking at different forms of alternative education, and I stumbled upon this idea of homeschooling, which was completely foreign to me. This was in the late 90s. When there were about 850,000 homeschoolers in the United States. It had just become legally recognized in 1993 in all 50 states. So it was a relatively kind of new idea, and certainly not something that was as embedded in the mainstream as it's become. But it was really interesting, and I had a classmate at the time who had a family member who was homeschooling, and so I was able to go into their home and see what learning looked like outside of school. And it was the first time I ever even imagined that as a possibility. It really stuck with me, particularly because at the same time for that same class, I was also in a traditional elementary school classroom watching learning there. And it was just striking to see the difference between the learning I saw in the home environment, really nurturing and natural and a very welcoming space, and then what you would imagine of a traditional, in this case, primary school classroom. So that stuck with me and actually prompted me to then go to graduate school in education policy at Harvard, where I became even more interested in the ideas around alternative education and education choice. But it wasn't until, you know, almost a decade later, when I was a mom looking at education options for my own kids, that I revisited homeschooling, realized that it had doubled in number in the U.S. I'm sure that's the case as well for you in the U.K. And that it was really a viable education choice. So I began researching homeschooling that time as a mom, not just a student, and I was hooked. I had remembered what I had experienced in that homeschooling family's kitchen, you know, years before, and wanted to recreate that in my home, and also then saw the ways that homeschooling had evolved over that decade. So connected with my local homeschooling community, and then ultimately found my way to self-directed education, or sometimes called unschooling, which is really more interest-based, child-focused, child-led learning. And that's where we are now.
So like I said, so many things we can pick up on. One of the, maybe you can talk a little bit about the connection between education or the schooling system and the economic phase that we're in, because I know that something I read that you had written, but also other things I've read about this, the way that we think of school is very much an industrial age concept, that before that, this isn't how we educated kids. It's very much tied up with the whole industrial way of thinking, isn't it?
That's right. So, you know, when we think about compulsory schooling, it's a relatively recent societal development. You know, the first compulsory schooling statutes were passed in the United States in 1852, and those were followed not that long after by British compulsory schooling statutes. So it was really kind of the trend of the time, dovetailing with the Industrial Revolution, to have this factory model of schooling. And prior to that, education had a much broader definition. So it really has been only in the last, say, 165 years or so that we have confined education within the four walls of a school classroom. And I think that the real trend, as people start to realize, you know, this factory model of schooling isn't working now for where our culture is, where our society is, and where we're headed. So I think there's really a demand to kind of broaden our focus, to move beyond this idea of education as synonymous with schooling, and really see where we're going. We're kind of out of the industrial era and moving into this innovation age. And that's going to require a whole set of different skills and knowledge that factory model schooling can't possibly address.
So would you say that, because it's really interesting, obviously, with my experience now of homeschooling my daughter, I'm getting exposed to lots of a whole other world of people who are doing this. And a lot of them are doing it for very personal reasons, either because their children were struggling at school or because of bullying or because of special educational needs, or just, you know, in my case, I thought it was a better fit for my daughter to be in a different environment for her learning. But then you can step back and see it not just as a set of individual choices that parents are making, but as a reflection of something broader going on in society. Is that kind of where you come from, as well as obviously wanting something for your own children from a very personal level?
Right. I think it's this rejection of authoritarianism overall. I think, you know, we see the ways in which, particularly in the case of schooling, mass schooling has become far more restrictive than it ever was. So if you look at, I mean, it's just not the same schooling that it was even when we were children. I mean, kids are spending much more time in school. There's research studies that show that the amount of time kids are spending in school dramatically increased, for example, in the United States, at least, between the early 1980s and the early 2000s. So just a 20-year period, there was a tremendous increase in time spent in school, and that didn't even include the after-school care that often children are increasingly in, so sort of full day schooling. This was just your kind of your typical traditional school day was longer. So as a result of more time spent in school, we're also seeing a really unsettling decline in childhood play, and then some of the emotional, physical, mental disorders that are resulting from depriving children of play. So we're seeing, you know, rising increases in anxiety and depression, gross motor skill delays, all kinds of things like that, which can really be linked back to this decline in childhood play, which is often related to an increase in time children spend in structured activities, including schooling.
Yeah. So, I mean, we could, you know, that I would love to spend the whole time I'm talking to you talking about homeschool and the different philosophies. And you know, maybe people will say, well, bring Carrie back on. We want to have that conversation as well. But I think as a future trend, homeschooling and the rise in homeschooling, the number of quite high profile people who are talking about the fact that they're homeschooling or unschooling their children is really interesting. And as a sort of reflection of changes in society. So, and you know, in the work that I'm doing, I'm helping organizations to almost rewire, or the people within those organizations to rewire their thinking. It seems that you have to look at education too. If you want different kind of thinking in business, it has to start when those individuals are children.
I think so. I mean, I think it's really just challenging assumptions and challenging defaults. So we think of schooling, for example, as something that's just a necessary, you know, cultural practice, but yet we don't realize that it's really relatively new. That certainly we would all agree that we need an educated citizenry, that we need to, you know, focus on making sure that children have the skills to succeed in the culture to which they belong. But we don't necessarily need forced schooling as the mechanism to do that. And I think one interesting data point that your audience members might be interested in is in her book, Now You See It, the author Kathy Davidson wrote that 65% of children now entering elementary school will work at jobs in the future that have not yet been invented. So we have this factory model of schooling that was really designed, as she says, for our great-great-grandparents, but that can't possibly meet the expectations and needs of a rapidly changing technology-fueled culture.
Yeah, I mean, it's so interesting that my job didn't exist when I was a kid. Most of the people I know do jobs that didn't exist, or they certainly couldn't imagine themselves doing it. So it will be even more so for our children, which kind of implies then that the fact-based education, being able to regurgitate correct information, isn't necessarily the purpose of education anymore, or shouldn't be the purpose of education. So So what are some of the qualities that we do want these kids to have to prepare them for jobs that don't even exist yet?
Right. I think it's right. I think that, you know, the kind of the rote learning, the student subservience, the memorization and regurgitation that are sort of characteristic of conventional schooling are inadequate for the demands of the future. The good news is that kids already have all of the skills that we need them to have when they're young, and that it's really our system of coercive schooling that kind of drills these skills out of them. So if you think about babies and toddlers and preschoolers, they are filled with energy, exuberance, curiosity, the sort of innate drive to explore and discover their world, inventiveness, imagination, all of these skills. And so I think the key is just to not stop that with a coercive system of schooling. It's really to nurture those skills and qualities because that's what's needed in our workforce and will be even more needed in the workforce of the future when our children grow up, that they'll need that curiosity, that ability to self-educate, to drive their own learning, to collaborate, to communicate well, all of these things that they already possess as children, we just need to continue to cultivate.
It's so funny because one of the things I read on your website was this question that everyone is always asked when they're young: what do you want to be when you grow up? And of course, most of us as adults are still trying to work it out. We don't know the answer to that question ourselves. But what's kind of embedded in that question is that somehow childhood is there's something wrong with childhood, almost, that it's not a real phase of life. It's just a preparatory phase for adulthood.
I think that's right. So John Dewey, who was sort of the very well-known 20th century progressive educator, once said that, "I believe that education, therefore, is a process of living and not a preparation for future living." And again, I think we really lost sight of that as education has become enclosed within the four walls of a school classroom, that we have this sense that life begins after, it begins later. It's something that we postpone, and we have to be in school so that we can ultimately be something and do something. And I think that that really dismisses what children, what any of us already are, what we already are doing. As you say, you know, do any of us really know what we want to be when we grow up? Where it's a constant process that's evolving and changing, and we're you know, matching our skills and talents with various jobs and careers that might be available. So I think the blog post that you're talking about refers to my 11-year-old daughter, who when asked what she wants to be when she grows up, she'll respond, "Well, a baker, but I already am one." And I think it's really this sense of she's already doing this. She's an incredible baker. She makes homemade pies from scratch, something I have never done. And she really just learned through an interest in cooking and baking, and then access to the kitchen. You know, she started looking at cookbooks in the children's room of the library and quickly outgrew those to the adult section of the library. She watches The Great British Baking Show, which is her favorite, and learns incredible things. And then she makes these pies. She brings them, you know, certainly to family gatherings and gives them to friends. She's even been able to sell a few here and there. She was just a homeschool craft fair recently where she was selling some of her goods. So, you know, I think there's this idea of what are children doing now? What are any of us doing now? That education is simply that process of discovering our world and building skills and knowledge to do something worthwhile.
One of the things that people might be wondering about is the practicalities of this. And whilst I said I don't want to get into, or we can't really get into all the aspects of homeschool in this conversation, it's not really what it's about. If people are listening to this and thinking, well, that, you know, that's great, but I have to go to work. My partner and I both have to go to work in order to bring in the kind of money that it takes to have a decent life these days. So there's a few things that come up for me with that. I mean, one is, yes, school is basically childcare, in one major way. And there aren't a lot of alternatives to that, certainly in the society that we live in right now. The other is that childhood and adulthood have been really segregated, and that children are not so much part of the adult world. And my daughter had her hair dyed last week, purple. That's how she wants to express herself right now, is with purple hair. And so we spent the whole day at the hairdresser. When we got home, I was sitting in the corner reading a book. She'd been chatting with the hairdressers the whole day. She knew all about the different chemicals they used. She knew all about how they'd become hairdressers and all of their different stories. She'd been around the back of the hairdressing salon to see how they store all the stuff, and that each of them actually buys their own products, because they all have their favorites and their own brushes and all of that, like a chef would have his own knives. She learned so much from being part of the adult world in a way that's not possible when you're at school. So those are two really different points, but the point being that we separate out adults and children, we make it almost impossible for them to actually be integrated.
Right. So the two points I would say is, one, this idea of unschooling or self-directed education is really about integrating children back into society, enabling them to learn through the vast resources of their community, both real communities around them and digital communities that now make access to information and knowledge so much more accessible to so many more people. So there's definitely this sense that unschooling and even to some degree homeschooling are much more community-based, authentic learning. So that's the one piece of it. The other piece around the practicality of it, I think there's sort of two responses. One is that you can really make some radical changes, as you've done, to really make this lifestyle work. So you can do some world schooling, you can think a little bit more about the place of your work and career in your life, and if it's feasible to maybe make some changes to make this more possible so that everyone is more fulfilled and living a sort of more unschooled life, I should say. But then the other piece, and the part that I'm really interested in, is making self-directed education in particular, again, sometimes known as unschooling, more accessible to more families. And the work that I do as a board member of the Alliance for Self-Directed Education is really focused on this. So it's about supporting organizations that make unschooling more feasible for more families. And how does that work? Well, what we are seeing an explosion of are self-directed learning centers that are in communities where families might register as homeschoolers, but then they're able to use these self-directed learning centers either part-time or full-time, so anywhere from a day a week to 5 days a week, where kids can go into these centers, nothing is coerced, there may be classes that are offered, but nothing is mandatory, and kids are able to explore the resources in those areas that are accessible to them, and explore what's interested in for them in a really non-coercive way. And that's a way of really, I think, making this philosophy much more accessible. I think the other piece is looking at democratic schools, free schools, certainly Summerhill, which you have in England, which was sort of the first of these self-directed education schools, again, where kids are treated with kind of mutual respect, they're actively involved in the self-governance of their school, and nothing is mandatory. But as in the case of Summerhill, like these learning centers, classes are offered, they're just not mandatory. They're just not compelled to be there. And so much more learning happens, more naturally and without kind of that compulsion that I think takes away from a lot of the motivation to learn.
You could listen to what you've just been saying and think, well, kids aren't going to go to the class then if they're not forced to go to the class. But it's this kind of thinking that operates in the business world too, in the working world, where we think people won't come to work unless there are consequences for not coming to work. You know, they'll be fired or they'll be in performance management review or whatever. Actually, there's a whole different way of thinking, which is, I think, what you're talking about, which is that children are, human beings are completely wired to learn, and that human beings want to contribute and want to make a difference. And that actually there's a lot in our society that blocks that natural desire.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I hear this all the time. Well, you know, kids these days, they're so lazy, they have to be forced to learn. You know, if they didn't have sort of rewards and punishments, they wouldn't do anything. But what we're talking about here are schooled kids, kids who've been trained to lose that natural drive, that natural curiosity, that natural love of learning that we all possess as young children. So for children who've never been schooled or who leave school, kind of go through this de-schooling process, and then find their way to natural learning, they're able to have that creative spark and that natural drive for learning relit. So I think the same would be true, as you say, with the work environment too. Well, I just go to my job because it's, you know, gives me a paycheck. And it's the sense of kind of lack of agency and lack of empowerment that I think is really fueled by our coercive schooling system.
So we've talked about this idea that 65% of the jobs that will exist in the future haven't been invented yet. So there's the sort of professional motivation to rethink education, rethink schooling or learning. But then there's also a kind of health imperative. I mean, we all know the incidence of depression in our society. Certainly mental health is very high up in focus right now. So there are lots of kind of health issues going around in society at the moment. Do you think that it's not only because we need some skills in future, but also that actually we're creating a very unhealthy adults by the way we treat kids at that stage?
I think you're right. I mean, the rates of anxiety and depression in children and adolescents are skyrocketing. Suicide rates are going through the roof, certainly doubling, I think, for teenagers in the last decade, is some of the most recent research out of the U.S. Centers for Disease Control. So, you know, these are real consequences to our increasingly restrictive form of schooling. And interestingly, I recently interviewed a man by the name of George Popham, who runs the Bay State Learning Center in Massachusetts, not too far from where I'm located, which is a self-directed learning center for homeschoolers, registered as homeschoolers, but able to go to that center either part-time or full-time, depending on family needs and children's needs. And he says that his group really focuses on kids 10 to 18. And he finds that he gets a lot of his students who came from these traditional kinds of schooling environments were incredibly anxious and depressed. And this learning center becomes this other option, sort of, you know, what can we do for this child that's really having tremendous anxiety, maybe, you know, even has had suicide attempts and that sort of thing. What can we do? And so they find their way to the Bay State Learning Center and some of these other learning centers around. And what he has said is that he will get calls from therapists just a few weeks after the kids arrive, and they'll say, "What have you done? These kids are completely changed." And he will respond, he says, "It's not what we've done, it's what we haven't done. We haven't controlled these kids. We haven't you know, structured every moment of their lives. We haven't given them respect, particularly as teenagers who are really biologically designed to be out and about in the real adult world, doing meaningful work, surrounded by an assortment of different people, you know, not having every part of their life controlled by someone older, that this can be incredibly liberating to be in a self-directed education environment."
And do you think that will affect the mental health of the adult world in future too? Because, you know, I know from my work that people are breaking under the pressure of the ways that they work and live today. It is kind of unsustainable, I think.
I think it is. And I think that, you know, some of it is this mismatch between someone's real skills and passions and then the work that they're ultimately doing and feel like they can't necessarily bridge those two things. And so maybe it's about trying to become more authentic as ourselves and thinking about creating work around our own interests, around our own passions. And I think that that's really the future of work for sure.
It's interesting you talk about passions there. So what, how are self-directed learners different in later life to, you know, in adulthood to schooled kids in later life?
Right. So my colleague at the Alliance for Self-Directed Education is Dr. Peter Gray, who is a professor of psychology at Boston College. And he has done substantial research on the outcomes of people who learn in self-directed learning environments, whether it's these kind of self-directed democratic schools or learning centers or unschoolers. And he has found, particularly in one of his more recent research studies around grown unschoolers, so people who learned outside of school without following kind of school-like things in their homes, so not replicating school at home, but really doing what we're saying is becoming immersed in their overall environment, driven by their interests, that they end up having very fulfilled lives. If they want to go on to university, they do. They, you know, are able to learn the skills that they need to match a career to their interests. And in fact, many of them are doing work that is tied to their interests and that were interests that they began to express when they were young children or teenagers. So there is some evidence to say that the outcomes are good. And this is a, you know, a relatively kind of newer movement in terms of tracking these data. But what we've seen so far is that it's really positive.
Are they also redefining what success looks like? Because one of the trends that I've seen over the years that I've been coaching, often very senior people, is that they had such a restrictive idea about what success looked like, and they achieved, they ticked all the boxes and then wondered what it was all for. It doesn't have as much meaning as they thought it was going to have, and in fact feels kind of like a trap.
I think that's right. I mean, I often say that I loved school. I quickly learned how to play the game of school, which was to become very conditioned to giving up kind of my own creative drive and natural childhood curiosity and conforming to the expectations of a schooling environment. So I learned how the whole system of rewards and punishments work and how to comply with that system. And I think there's a wonderful book written by Kirsten Olsen called Wounded by School, where she argues that many of us may think we came out of a coercive schooling environment unscathed. You know, look at us, we went to university, we got these good jobs, we're making money, we're doing great. But really, if you dig deeper, you realize what was lost in that. So maybe we, you know, were at one point wonderful artists and we, as children, and we gradually learned that our form of art wasn't appropriate for the kind of art that was happening in school. And so we bury that interest or that love of something in order to play the game of school. And I think another piece of that certainly she talks about in Wounded by School is that we become conditioned to seek and crave extrinsic rewards, which could be, you know, the grades that we get in school or the score on the test that we get, standardized tests. And then, you know, later on become conditioned to wanting that title for our job or for that, you know, raise for our salary. So it's really becoming conditioned to extrinsic rewards and losing that kind of intrinsic drive that we certainly all had as children.
So there's a couple of other things that I want to ask about. It's slightly a tangent, but it's something that I read again and something that you'd written about distrust of parents versus trust of the state. And I think that's quite interesting because we know that levels of trust in authority are at an all-time low. And yet we still all kind of conform. So we conform in the workplace, even though we may not trust the big bosses that run the organization, or we might not trust the motivations of the shareholders. We still kind of comply with that. And there's a similar, it just seemed to have a kind of resonance with, for me, when you said, weirdly, we have this general distrust of parents being able to make wise decisions about their children, but we will trust the state.
I think that's true. I mean, that's really the roots of compulsory schooling statutes from the 19th century. It was really this sense of distrust of parents to be able to effectively educate their children, and that everyone should be kind of under the control of the state to comply with forced schooling. And I think that that really lingers. I mean, certainly we've benefited from the generation before who've made homeschooling legally recognized, certainly in the US and the UK. So it's easier for us now to be able to take this alternative path that's more family-centered, that empowers parents. But I think there's definitely kind of this overwhelming distrust of parents to be able to educate their children, and to, the sense that the state can somehow educate your children or care for your children better than parents, I really think is a dangerous belief system.
It does seem as though built into the whole idea of unschooling and homeschooling, home educating, is a particular skill at being able to question almost everything. So everything that you were absolutely sure was true may not be true. So questioning whether school is necessarily right for your child, questioning whether it's necessary to have two full-time incomes in order to have a fulfilling life, questioning whether you should keep your passions as your hobbies and make a job out of something that you can make a lot of money at. These seem like fundamental questions we need to be asking.
Right. I mean, and I think that the key thing to remember is that for most of us, we grew up under this authoritarian schooling system where we were trained to comply with authority and obey what we were, told to do. So it's really hard then, as we emerge from that authoritarian environment, to reclaim some of our own autonomy and individuality that was really stripped from us as children. But I'm optimistic that we can get out from under this, because, for example, the previous generation of parents was much more likely, for example, to spank their children. And yet now we see data come out that says that today's parents are much less likely to spank their own children. And I think that's just one example of where we may have been around an authoritarian environment, but we're able to do something different for our children. We're able to recognize that might not be, the most fulfilling way to live. And we search for alternatives that are more focused around freedom and autonomy.
So it might not be too late for our kids and for us to change the way that we parent them, but is it too late for us as adults? Is there a way that we can apply unschooling principles to our adult lives?
Right. I think it's really what we've talked about. It's challenging assumptions, challenging defaults, wondering about kind of why are we doing this? It's always the way it's been done, but not really digging a little bit deeper into questioning those precedents. And so I think we can apply that to many parts of our lives, and also really understand that maybe some of this sense of disempowerment or lack of control that we may feel in our lives, we might be able to change if we kind of alter our thinking a little bit and wonder about, kind of what got us to this point of relying on certain outcomes or certain extrinsic rewards. Could that have been related to kind of the authoritarian schooling that we may have had? And can we get out from under that to chart a new path?
I just want to congratulate you, by the way, Kerry, because you just heard that you've got a book deal. You have a new book that you need to write. Tell us a bit about that.
Right. Thank you. Yes, I just signed a book deal with Chicago Review Press for a book currently titled Unschooled, Raising Curious, Well-Educated Kids Without Conventional Schooling. And it, I think, is really going to crystallize many of the themes that we've talked about today about, with some of these assumptions we have around schooling and education, disentangling schooling from education, and then charting this new course that's really focused on self-directed learning.
I can't wait. Can't wait for it to come out. And we'll certainly share with our audience when that happens and they can get hold of a copy. Just to give a little bit of flavor, can you, it's early morning for you. Well, not that early now we've been chatting for a while. What does your day have in store as an unschooling mom?
Well, I'm going to be writing this book. But speaking of, and this is actually relevant to what we've been talking about, and thinking about work in a different way. A couple of years ago, my husband, who had a very busy, travel-intensive job as an international strategy consultant for a major firm, left. And now he just works part-time. He works like 2 days a week, 2 or 3 days a week, doing his own kinds of consulting. And that's the only reason that we're able to do this, and that I'm now able to spend a little bit of the other time also doing my own writing. And then today, for example, my kid's grandmother, my husband's mother, is coming in as well to be with the kids and help my husband out and all of that. So, using the resources of the community. And my older daughter, who's 11, goes a day a week to one of these self-directed learning centers, and that is her day today. So she is there. My husband will probably take my 8-year-old skateboarding, because that's his passion. And then my mother-in-law will, I'm sure, go to the library or to one of our local museums with my 4-year-old and my 6-year-old. So it's really thinking about learning without schooling and working in a new way as well, that I think really focuses around life goals and priorities.
Lovely. Well, Kerry, thank you so much. I've really enjoyed talking to you today.
This has been great. Thanks for having me, Blair.
I hope you found that thought provoking. We did really range around the subject and jump back and forth quite a bit, but I hope you got something from that. As I said, you can follow Kerry on Facebook. Just go to Facebook and search Whole Family Learning. And you can follow her on Twitter at Kerry_EDU, at Kerry_EDU. And her website is wholefamilylearning.com. If you're on that website and you want to find out more about some of the books she mentioned, she lists those in an article called Letter to a Prospective Homeschooling Parent. And so you can find that on her website, but I'll also put a link to that article on the information about this episode. So that's it for today. As I say, I hope you found that interesting. It was something a little bit different, a little bit left field, but I think the connections with work and with leadership and the future of business are really, really clear. I will be back, of course, next week. I don't know what next week's show is going to be about. I have to have a think about that. But if you have any ideas, do get in touch and let me know what you would like to know more about from me. In the meantime, here is how to stay in touch with us here at That People Thing with the lovely Ivy Palmer.
You can follow our travel adventures on Instagram as A Brilliant Gamble and on our Facebook group, also called A Brilliant Gamble. Please join and share your travel stories and other brilliant gambles you've made or you want to make. Plus, for tips, tools, inspiration and resources about leadership and change, you can follow Mummy on Twitter at Blair Palmer and on this podcast's Facebook page, Punks and Suits. And finally, to find out how to work with Mummy as a coach or have her speak about leadership and change at your next event, visit the website at www.thatpeoplething.com. Thank you, hug! Thank you.